Well, there's been a lot going on with the CVM. It's the Child Victims Act, and with school districts. So we told you about what happened with Herricks on Friday as far as that verdict. But all in all, there are way too many incidents. Laura Aaron's been at the front and center as far as combating, standing up for rights as well. The great job she does over the Crime Victims Center, the executive director, and Parents for Megan's Law. Laura, an old friend, joins us for a couple of minutes here on this Monday morning. Great having you.
Wonderful to be here, Jay.
Indeed. Way too many incidents. You know, it's almost as if we report on some of this stuff every week. Tough to take, especially with Herricks, all that went on with that psychologist back in the 80s, and a victim, alleged victim there, telling his side of things. But other people found it different as far as how Herricks acted in that regard. Laura, give me a sense what you assessed after everything.
I think, as Newsday reported, people were shocked at the result. The district, they reported that the district did not act with reckless regard in failing to protect that particular victim from Vincent Festa. Very surprising. we saw that Herricks had prior settlements already. Yeah. So they previously settled 4 CVA cases to the tune of $1.25 million. So we were very surprised. And in fact, they had a total of 21 former students who made claims against that school psychologist, Festa, and against the district. So it's very surprising and shocking. But we have to keep in mind that we were not we are not a juror, and we don't know what evidence the jury actually was exposed to. We have no idea what it was, but it is still pretty shocking because they already settled cases against him.
Yeah, that's what it comes down to. It comes down to evidence. You know, they didn't feel they had enough. That's what one of the jurors at least stated, and they made an assessment based on that. If they don't have the evidence, they're not going to convict. I mean, let's. You know, just cut down to the chase. That's what it's all about, right?
Yeah, and you know, most people don't fully understand, and it's a little complicated. Employers can't be held liable for those acts committed by their employees when they're acting basically for their personal motives, unrelated to the employer's business. But that employer can be held liable for negligent hiring, negligent retention, and negligent supervision of that employee. So it really lies in what's foreseeable. So when I have some CVA cases myself, and what we have to prove as plaintiff attorneys in my private law practice, what we have to prove is that the district had noticed, that they knew or should have known. So what is really surprising is that the district had settled those previous cases for $1.25 million, 4 of them. So there had to be something in those cases that led the district to settle. So, again, we don't know what that jury was exposed to. We don't know what evidence that they were given.
That's what it comes down to. Laura Ahern with us. As compared with some of these other findings, you know, we always delve into the days of the church, which, you know, seems to give you a clear-cut picture of what has transpired there over decades. It seems it's more clear-cut than it is with some of these schools, and we have seen plenty of incidents.
We have, and you know, we've seen such a big shift in our culture and the legislature acting to pass the Child Victims Act and the Adult Survivors Act, but that all started with the global scandal that started with the Boston Globe reporting on 5 cases where priests were sexually abusing children, and there was no contact with law enforcement, and there was no transparency. That kind of put the Catholic Church in a global crisis. Very recently, in fact, in 2023, it was reported in Spain that there were 200,000 children who were sexually abused by priests. But let's now not forget the Boy Scouts, where there are at least 92,000 victims that filed claims against the Boy Scouts in that was reported in 2012. So we've seen this shift. And then we saw a shift with Harvey Weinstein, where women came forward about their sexual victimization. And then that was in 2017. And then we saw the legislature in 2019 passed the Child Victims Act, which gave a window for victims, no matter when the sexual abuse occurred, it gave them a window to bring civil claims. And that's what we're dealing with now. So the Catholic Church, the Boy Scouts, other, it's not just the Catholic Church, other houses of worship, public and private schools, community organizations are now being held accountable for what had happened, their negligence in the past in failing to take action when they knew that a particular person was sexually victimizing children. And here we are right now where schools and public and private institutions are now being held accountable and have to pay these large settlements or, you know, by trial. But in this case, they didn't find enough evidence. And that's a shame. And, you know, I think everyone was shocked. But the bottom line is we have to trust in our system.
You know, it's amazing. We told Laura Ahern here with regarding the CVA and all that's going on with Herrick's Child Victims Act, folks. You know, it's amazing that the district already paid out over $1 million to settle, what, four cases, Laura, involving this guy?
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
And, you know, whatever the amount is, I think it was like $50,000 all the way up to $800,000, $900,000, whatever it was. You had another two lawsuits against Herrick settled. But all in all, it seems like whatever happened in the past compared to this, you know, there's some oddities involved here. We're wrongdoing in the past, but not in this particular case, you know?
Well, we don't really know. So what I have to add is that Newsday has done a phenomenal job of digging deep. Jim Baumbach is one of the reporters, digging deep into getting as many documents as they can. And what we've seen in some of the cases that we're working on, too, at the Crime Victim Center, is that parents in the past make complaints. In fact, children have made complaints, and there's nothing that documents that complaint, even though there are witnesses that have testified that they made complaints. There's still nothing in the file. So I understand that in this case, jurors were looking for concrete evidence. One of the jurors reported that they had no documentation of any complaints, and that would have not been unusual because back then there wasn't a big effort made to make those complaints. So we don't know. That jurors have to make a decision based on what's presented to them. We don't know, and there's no way for me to say with surety whether or not they were exposed to the prior settlements, and most of the time they wouldn't be given that information, but I don't know what happened here. So we can't really judge what the jurors decided only based upon what their final decision is. That's it.
Mm. Do you think there'll be an impact based on this Festa case on other school districts? What do you think will be the ramifications involved there?
I don't really think there's going to be any negative implications from this. Only because each case is very unique. And there are a lot of witnesses in many of the cases that I've worked on. There are witnesses. There is documentation. I think that, as the juror said, that they had some challenges with the timeline of one of the witnesses. And then they also felt that there was, according to Newsday, one particular witness who was unaware of this. I think it's a tragedy that particular person who came forward didn't receive the justice that they expected to receive, but as the attorney said, they told their story, and sometimes for some of the victims that I've worked with, telling the story has been a top priority for them, and they finally tell the story. And there have been many, many cases where there is no documentation like this, and victims have still received the justice. We just don't know what happened here. I don't think it's going to have a backlash effect. I don't understand the reckless disregard in failing to protect that particular victim. I don't understand why it was not, as we are accustomed, negligent hiring, supervision, and retention. I don't really understand that. I have to look deeper into the case. But I don't believe it's going to have a negative impact, but we'll see.
We'll take a look, no question about it. And then there's the other case that rocked us all, is Thomas Bernagosi case, Laura, the Bayshore School District. Just a gut-wrenching story of an individual who seemed to do this numerous times. And you know what? The school district seemed to know about it as well. Just gut-wrenching.
Yeah, it is absolutely horrendous. These are institutions that are charged with educating our children, or in sports organizations or religious organizations. They're charged with providing services to children, to our most vulnerable. And they were, in certain cases, looking the other way, which facilitates a culture that we know we call the rape culture, where the sexual victimization of children and women and our most vulnerable is minimized, trivialized, and made to be accepted in our culture. And that's why the Child Victims Act passed, because it is unacceptable. And when you start to hold institutions accountable by making them pay, that's when the insurance companies start to pay attention and want those institutions to put into place policies and procedures that would protect them and prevent them from having liability. But in the end, it took all of that to get to a point where, you know, those institutions are going to protect the very children they serve. It's really outrageous. And there, you know, we know that one in four girls and one in 13 boys will be sexually abused in their childhood before they reach the age of 18 in the United States. I mean, it's really a national disgrace, but it is evolving now. We're at a point where we're seeing laws changing to hold those organizations liable. One of the great challenges, as we all know, is that there's a cost associated with this now. And, you know, insurance companies that were covering some of those districts, those insurance companies could be gone. They could have liquidated, and they can't find any resource. And they're having to go into district budgets and funds that school districts have. And that's a challenge for many people, as it was for religious institutions and those organizations like the Boy Scouts, where they have to liquidate assets to pay these claims out.
Yeah, no question about it, that they are certainly under the scope as well. And I'll tell you, you know, maybe the vetting process has dipped somewhat. Even with two cases that sickened all of us last week, the daycare worker was charged with sexual abuse of a 10-year-old, happens to be the spouse of the owner of that facility, if you can believe it. And then you had, a school bus driver out of Bayshore, charged with sexual abuse as well, over a 1.5-year period there. And just maybe, you know, we got to rethink this whole process of what's going on here. And again, it seems like we report on this once a week, at least once. Yeah. We get two horrific incidents last week, though, I mentioned.
You're right, Jay. And it really does come down to, with the daycare center that was an in-home daycare center.
Yeah.
So in our experience at the Crime Victim Center, many of the daycare center victimizations are occurring in in-home daycare centers because they don't have cameras, they don't have as many staff around. If you see something, say something. It's so critical for caregivers and parents to receive prevention education training. And it just sounds like, certain organizations are just trying to promote their programs, but it really is critical that education is on the top priority list for those organizations that serve our most vulnerable. And, you know, we all know what had happened, what came out in Babylon, the same thing in Bayshore and a lot of other school districts. It's not just those. But what has to happen is teachers and staff and, you know, janitors, everyone has to receive training. And in Babylon, we have a great program going where that happens. So children, teens, and all staff receive training annually. That has to happen everywhere because people don't necessarily know what to look for when somebody might be preying on a particular child. In an in-home daycare center environment, everyone has to be fingerprinted in that home, but that doesn't mean it's going to detect a person who has certain behavior that would be questionable. So it's critical to educate about the behavior of a person who might be trying to engage a child in a grooming process, ultimately to sexually victimize them. And then it's also critical not only for staff to be trained, but for kids to learn about the certain areas of their bodies that are private, the bathing suit areas, and then if somebody tries to come into those areas, that they have to tell. And if nobody does anything, they have to continue to tell until somebody does something. That's how you stop victimization, like stop it short right there. And in our programs in public and private schools, which the schools are wonderful now on Long Island, they call us all the time to help them comply with Erin's Law, which requires prevention education in schools. But it's critical, staff training and also educating kids, empowering them that they have a right to say no.
Yeah, 100%. And I know it's even got to the point, I was reading, it was probably about a month ago, we had senators in Georgia, Republican senators, who wanted to cull some of the sexually explicit books from schools, even ban sex education for some of the younger students, and even to the point where they wanted to display some religious books, Ten Commandments, I think I was reading, in some of the classrooms, and allow some of the chaplains to counsel teachers and students there. So it's gotten to the point in other areas of the country where, you know, they're kind of seeing the light of what's going on here, what has gone on, and they're kind of taking it into their own hands as far as what should be on display and what shouldn't.
Yeah, that's a sort of a red herring, I think, for a lot of parents. There's fear that they'll be exposed to certain words. And you know, in our training, which are curriculum-based and evidence-informed or evidence-based, there's never any language used that would make a parent uncomfortable. We always use bathing suit areas for those young ones. We always talk about boundaries, and kids ask them to imagine a bubble around them. And if somebody gets into that space, whether it's emotionally, by bullying, or physically, by trying to touch certain areas of their body, they have a right to say no. And if they have to go to a doctor or, you know, be examined, mom or dad are always there. I mean, if it's a family member that's doing something to them, they have a right to say no and go and tell somebody. But these are really critical skills that young kids need to learn in a fun and entertaining way. And there's a way to do that. And we do that at the Crime Victim Center. And another thing, Jay, I wanted to make you aware of is the organization started, I know you and I spoke about this, a sexual assault nurse examiner program. So our organization is now responding to acute sexual assault victims with nurses, New York State licensed nurses, SANE nurses, to perform evidence collection exams at Sternberg University Hospital. So that, along with accompaniment rape crisis responders as well. So we're looking forward to working with our local, state, and federal elected officials coming up in April. We have lots of announcements to make. We're very excited about being part of the solution.
Yeah. Well, listen, you've been always front and center at this, and continuing the fight, you always will. No question about it. Laura Ayer does a great job. The Crime Victim Center, of course, those involved with Megan's Law, the fight continues, and we appreciate a couple of minutes here on a very important topic, and hopefully, you know, it's about discussions and keeping those communication lines open, and I think that's the key to it all, you know, as far as the fight.
Exactly. It's about keeping relationships with your children open and letting them know it's okay to tell when something makes them feel uncomfortable, because that's what sexual predators count on. They groom children, make them feel guilty, blame them, make them feel responsible for their own victimization, which is obviously just part of how they trap children and they continue to molest them. So it's really important to have a relationship with your children that they can trust you to talk to you, and teens as well. And look, Jay, 86% of child sexual abuse goes unreported. It's an incredible statistic. And 68% of adult sexual assault goes unreported. So imagine all of those sex crimes that are unreported, that law enforcement never has an opportunity to investigate, arrest, and the district attorney never has an opportunity to prosecute. So in our district attorney, Ray Tierney, is very proactive. So we really want to create an environment where it's safe for victims to come forward, and that starts with ultimately that relationship that's built. So you're right on point.